is from the Munich University of Mosi. He's a researcher over there, and he did his PhD on Oxford University. He's almost finished, only the last formal things have to be done now. His lecture will be about critical system development with UML. And meanwhile, that we know that UML is not always that precise. So I'm wondering how he will make UML precise enough and give it that semantics that we can make critical systems using UML.
Okay, thank you very much. And thank you very much for the opportunity to give this talk. This work arises out of the context out of my PhD thesis, and the more general context is that of what I looked at the thesis was actually to apply UML together with a formal semantics for a fragment of UML to secure systems development, and here I'm demonstrating how to generalize this approach to consider dependable rather than security critical systems. So firstly, what is the general problem? The problem is that the development of systems that are critical in some sense is generally difficult. And critical here means dependable, security critical, all real time and so on. And well, the effect of that is that many systems that are developed and that are actually used in practice do not fulfill the requirements on their criticality that are required. So, and this holds in the various application domains. In the case of dependabilities, there are some quite spectacular examples. For example, that of the Ariane rocket that failed a couple of years ago. Or there's this example of that Perak medical device where people receive treatments who, which led even to a loss of life because the system was not designed correctly. So, especially when humans are involved, of course, one has to be sure that the system actually does what it should, but unfortunately, this is not always the case in practice. And this is the motivation for this kind of work. So, the problem is in practice that, one might ask oneself, why is it the case that the systems don't actually do what they should do? And the simple answer is that correctness is in conflict to cost. So if companies would be willing or forced to invest arbitrary sums of money into developing something, then thereby you could probably get rather high degrees of confidence. But of course, in practice, there's always a commercial pressure on the development of a system, and so you, in practice, compromises are being made, and sometimes these have quite tragic consequences. So, the goal then must be to try to develop methods that increase the reliability of the systems that are used, but still have in mind that in industry people have to pay attention to costs. And that is the problem maybe of many of the methods that have been developed in the past under the catchword of formal methods. Namely that these in principle do the job because you can verify that the system actually does what it should, but the problem in practice is that they are not so easy to use and people have to be trained especially to use them, and therefore the system gets rather expensive when you use this to develop systems, and that's why this is not done so often in practice. So the motivation then of this work in particular is to take up some of the ideas in this formal methods world and try to put it into practical use by making use of this notation UML. And the point here is that UML is sort of unique in the sense that it is probably the first language with a the first modeling language with a comparable size of a user community. So you could say it is pretty much a de facto standard. For example, there are many students at universities taught in using UML, so you can assume that in future developers will know this notation. Keeping that in mind, it is in fact relatively precisely defined, but of course only relative. So what this means exactly is that in the UML specification document, you have a description of the meaning of the diagrams in English language. Which is in a relative degree of detail, this description. So compared to the earlier methods that were the predecessors of the UML when it was actually unified a couple of years ago, this is an advance on the level of preciseness that compared to the earlier notations. And yeah, especially considering what kind of user community the notation has, it is actually relative precise, but of course, for some things you want a higher level of preciseness, and as mentioned already, I will say a little bit about that later in the talk. And another thing that is useful with regards to UML is that there are quite a lot of tools existing already or currently in development. And firstly, of course, these are the drawing tools, the classical and most famous one is Rational Rolls, but there are quite a number of alternatives already. And these, of course, allow you to draw your UML diagrams and also get further benefit, like generating code to some degree. But there are also tools currently in development in academia and also in industry institutes which will allow you to go further with this kind of tool support. So not just to draw the diagrams and maybe derive code fragments, but also to analyze diagrams for consistency and maybe also even for requirements on the behavior of the system. So this is a promising development, and that was one of the reasons why it seemed a good idea to try to use UML in this context. But of course, there's still some work to be done in order to be able to do this. And one of the aspects here was actually already mentioned in the previous talk. So it is possible and should also be done to adapt UML to various application domains. One extension is already mentioned, a rather famous one, namely that of UMLRT, adapting UML to the real-time application domain. But there are also quite a number of other extensions currently in development. The second point is, of course, you also have to come up with design methodologies that allow you to use UML correctly in your specific domain. And then coming back to the earlier remark on the preciseness of the notation, there's a conflict between the flexibility and the unambiguity of the notation, meaning that some things in UML are actually left slightly imprecise, because this allows you to be more flexible in the use of UML. And the challenge there is that if you actually want to use tool support, then of course you have to make things precise at that point where you actually want to mechanically analyze your specifications. So you have to solve this problem of resolving these so-called semantic variation points. And the last challenge also, I mentioned there are already a couple of tools, and there are further tools in development, but of course this is not done yet, this whole thing, and it is also a lot of work to be done still there. So yeah, I assume that you have already, most of you have already seen UML, so just a couple of words. It's a visual modeling language, mainly for object-oriented systems, but can also be used for example, for component-oriented systems more generally. Visual meaning that you can use diagrams to describe your system, and more exactly to describe different views of the system. For example, the physical layer, or the structural view, or the behavior of the system. And one advantage is that it allows you to be on various levels of abstraction, depending on your need on the model. And yeah, I mentioned already it's a de facto industry standard, and that we have these extension mechanisms, which I will explain in more detail. So yeah, how does it look like roughly? Again, I assume you have already seen some UML diagrams, so just here to get an idea for the people who have not. UML consists of various kinds of diagrams, which look like this, and I will explain some of them in more detail. So what I'm using in this general line of research is actually, as I mentioned, a fragment of UML, because while the UML in total is quite a huge language, the specification document altogether consists of 800 pages, and so if you want to, especially if you want to make use of tool support for UML specifications, then it's probably a good idea to take a fragment of that, and probably also to just a simplified fragment, because otherwise it will just not be feasible to even come up with useful tool support. Yeah, but I think that it is actually possible to do this and still have a subnotation which is expressive enough to model the things that you would like to model. And so the fragment that I'm using is consisting of activity diagrams, which allow you to model the flow of control between different components, then class diagrams giving the class structure, sequence diagrams allowing to model the interaction between different components, state chart diagrams giving the behavior of single components, then deployment diagrams which is the physical layer, and then you can use packages to collect all these different diagram kinds together. And yeah, as I mentioned already also, that UML offers these extension mechanisms, which we've already actually seen in the previous talk, namely stereotypes, which you can use to label model elements in order to incorporate a certain information. And you can also add more information to a stereotype using these so-called tagged values. And then you can thirdly use constraints in order to refine the semantics of the model elements that are attached with these stereotypes. And the effect is that if you have suitable tool support for that, you could check your UML specification, which includes this additional information given as stereotypes and tags, and check then using this tool whether the constraints that are connected with these stereotypes are actually fulfilled by the specification. So that's the general idea of making this kind of use of UML. And if you collect all these things together for a specific way of using UML in a specific application domain, that's called a profile. And the example that I'm considering here in this talk is then called UML Safe. Supposed to be a UML extension for development of dependable systems. And so the general ideas now, coming back to the earlier motivation, we would like to make our systems more reliable by starting to worry about dependability on the design level already. So not just implement the system and see what happens, but make sure that it is actually doing what it should from early on in the design process. And furthermore, you could not only analyze your specification, but the other way around, this way you can also transport engineering knowledge of your specific application domain to the developers that use this extension, who may not have a background in this application domain. Then, specifically, sometimes if you really consistent, you really worry about systems that should provide a very high degree of reliability, and you may want to have this certified formally, then this approach makes this process more cost-effective also, because for the certification you need a certain kind of documentation which has to be of a certain level of formality. And when you use this approach, then you have this documentation sort of as a side effect. So the general idea of this UMA extension is that the main dependability requirements are offered as stereotypes and tags. And as I mentioned already, when you you label your various parts of your UMA specification with this information, then you could then evaluate the specification in order to see whether your dependability requirements are actually fulfilled on the design level. And this consists of two parts. Firstly, you can see that these requirements that you inserted in the UML specification of the system actually give the overall dependability that should be achieved by the system. And secondly, you can check that the behavior that is, for example, the behavior that is specified in the UML model actually realizes the requirements that are given in these stereotypes. And so firstly, before one tries to define this kind of extension, one could wonder what properties such an extension should have. So firstly, as mentioned, it should be possible to conveniently express the important dependability requirements by using stereotypes. The problem in dependable systems, one of the main problems is of course that of failures that may arise during the deployment of a system. So it would be useful if you could simulate this within in the general framework. And also it would be good if important concepts used in dependable systems could be included in the framework already. For example, the redundancy of hardware components. So how does such a profile then look like? Here I'm giving just a small part of the profile, and generally it works like that. In the left column there are these stereotypes given, and here I'm showing five stereotypes, namely risk, guarantee, safe links, safe dependency, and containment, and each of these carries certain information which I will explain shortly on the next couple of slides. And they can be applied to certain model elements, namely in this case either to links and components. So these are components within your deployment diagram in UML, and communication links that may connect different components. And they may also be applicable to subsystems, and subsystems are a certain kind of package within UML. So they allow you to gather together diagrams describing different views on a system part, and also to encapsulate this information by using interfaces. And attached with some of these stereotypes, like risk and guarantee, there are also tags, which I will also explain on the next couple of slides. and with some of the other stereotypes you have in the fourth column constraints, just mentioned shortly, which I will also list in more detail, and well, very short description in the last column, but this is just to get a general idea of how a profile could look like. And of course, this is only a small fragment. So I mentioned that it would be useful if one could model failures within the general approach. And so in this, in order to do this, and especially if you want to do this in a tool-supported way, of course, you have to make more precise what kind of failures you want to consider. And so here I'm focusing on failures in communication between components and in the actual production of data by a given component. So when when components communicate, then data may be delayed, corrupted, or lost. And often one can make the assumption that these failures occur randomly, for example, in the case of hardware components. Sometimes this is not the case, for example, when you look at software failure, and then things get a bit more complicated. But for simplicity, I assume that here we can make this assumption. And then, in this framework, I also include a redundancy model, saying, in the sense that you can specify that certain components should be in the system with a certain level of redundancy, and that this redundancy should be resolved in a certain way, for example, by voting. And all of this put together, you should then be able to use this information together with the dependability requirements that are stated using stereotypes in order to find out whether your system actually provides these requirements. So, how do these failure models look like more exactly? So, we assume that we have given a redundancy. We are given a redundancy model, meaning a kind of idea or a description how redundancy should be provided. I'll give an example on the next slide how this could look like exactly. And then if you have a certain stereotype, then you give a meaning or a precise meaning to this stereotype by defining this set of failures depending on R and S. And this may contain three kinds of elements, namely delay with a subscript D, corrupt C, and lose L, where D is a probability distribution on the positive real numbers, viewed as the probability that a certain time delay will occur when the message is communicated across the link that is stereotyped with the stereotype S, assuming the redundancy model R. Then C is a probabilistic function, meaning a function which is given a certain message and gives back a message, and which actually depends on probability space. And this models the occurrence of corruption on the message that is transported over the communication link. Then L is a distribution on the two-element set 0,1, where the idea is that this represents the probability that the message gets lost completely. And in each case, this should already incorporate the redundancy from this redundancy model. So, short example on that, assume that this redundancy model means a certain component, namely here a controller, is included with in three copies, and then of these three copies, the fastest result is taken as the actual result that is used by the system. Then you can consider how these three elements to the these three kinds of information to the stereotype would look like. Then this function D then evaluates to the probability that the fastest controller uses time R, which is positive real number. and C is the corruption function for each single controller, and they are supposed to be identical anyway. And then the probability that the message still gets lost completely is P raised to 3, where P is the probability for a single controller. So this may give an idea how the sort of mathematical underlying model to this UML approach should look like. And the idea is, of course, that one would like, the idea is to develop tool support that that actually does the job of computing the probabilities and so on, which would be tedious otherwise. So now I have to hurry a bit quickly about the stereotypes. So the risk stereotype is supposed to describe the risk on the within the physical model of the system that a certain data communicated along a communication link is either delayed, corrupted, or lost completely. And this is again modeled using this information that we saw in the previous slide. And then, conversely, you can then formulate your guarantees within the structural UML model, where you have components and either components or class models and communication dependencies between these objects maybe, and there you can then specify reliability degree your underlying physical model should give to the actual system. So these two stereotypes, risk and guarantee, are sort of the two sides of the coin. The one side is what you get by the physical environment, and the other side is what you would like to have. And then, of course, you would like to be able to check whether these two sides of the coin fit together, namely that the physical layer gives you what you need on your system level. And this is this can be checked using the stereotype safe links. Namely, this stereotype now has a constraint attached with it, and intuitively the constraint is that actually the guarantees that are formulated on your system level model are actually met by the physical layer of the system. And this you can then make more precise, and here I'm also explaining this only informally, but using this failure model approach, which I showed earlier, you can actually make this mathematically precise, which allows you to then develop tool support for this. Yes, okay, I should wrap up quickly. Further stereotypes allow you to actually go down to the specific data in your model and attach certain levels of dependability down at the level of the specific data even. And this allows you to make sure that data that is critical is, for example, only communicated along links that are actually reliable. And this kind of thing you can check with this next stereotype and with the associated constraint. And then another example for a stereotype of this profile is that of containment, which makes sure, again, on the level of the data that is processed in your system, making sure that trusted data or reliable data is not a sort of made unreliable by depending on data which is not assumed to be reliable. And this you can then also check precise way using this stereotype. So as mentioned in the beginning, in order to do this you need some kind of formal foundation for the approach, and for that I developed a formal semantics for the used fragment, a simplified fragment of UML, which I cannot explain here, of course, because that's a talk in itself. The only interesting thing about that maybe is, I mean, there's been a lot of work in that direction, but new here is that you can actually give a formal model for complete UML specifications and not for only certain kinds of diagrams, which was the main work done so far. I mentioned already the general kind of idea can be applied to other application domains, and this was done originally to security critical systems. So work in progress now is on actually doing this work towards tool support, and this is done by connecting a UML drawing tool with a verification tool, but that's current work. So to wrap up, there are some resources on this. Firstly, on the related approach to security critical systems, which is, it's really analogous to the one presented here. That's a book coming out next year. And next week, there's a workshop which I'm helping to organize at the UML 02 in Dresden. Thank you.
Yes, thank you for this interesting presentation. What I noticed is that you didn't only develop a profile that enables specification, but this specification also tries to specify weaknesses, right? Yes. And I think that this specification invites also to do a kind of failure mode effect analysis or something like that. Mm-hmm. You didn't mention this, but so I think it's really convincing story. Thank you very much. One good question, because we are a bit behind schedule.
Have you covered the concept of a component guaranteeing behavior to the environment? An environment guaranteeing
yes.
Environment.
Yes. Yeah. So this is one of the one important idea in this kind of context, that you look at the relation between component and its environment, and in the formal methods community it's called rely guarantee properties. Yes. In fact. So this is also part of the. Yes.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.